This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
Golly, it's so good to be back with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of technology and science right here in the Science News Radio Network. Remind those of you listening on radio, you can also hear us commercial-free online and webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. We've got a really fun show today. When Reginald Brothers recently came in as Undersecretary of Homeland Security in charge of science and technology, he set the agency on a whole new course to have a national conversation with us about what is needed in order to make the nation more safe. So he wants to hear from all of us, and going around the country, meeting with responders and others, and trying to put together the very best system, a coherent system on how to do that. John Verrico is Chief of Media Relations for the Department of Homeland Security, Science, and Technology, and he's going to be our guest here today and tell us about some of the exciting things that are going on. So you're going to really enjoy that. We're going to get to John in just a minute. And in the second half of the program, we've got an encore interview with Francina Hulris. Very, very interesting lady. Francina Hulris, not only a woman, but a African-American, and she's the only one we know who is head of a security company that specializes in nuclear security. They're branching out into securing our infrastructure and other things, and so she's started a new company, Total Tactical Defense, and she has hired herself a president, a guy by the name of Ken Dyer, who has been doing remarkable things in security, and so he's kind of running things. And so we've got an encore interview with Francina telling us about some of the things that she holds dear, and it has to do with using our sixth sense. She believes that as we were in the jungle, that we could feel when danger was near, and we've kind of given that up since we got out of the jungle. And if we will really pay attention to the things around us, we can have that sixth sense come back again, reach deep down inside of us, and know when there is danger and how to protect ourselves. So you're going to enjoy the things that she has to say. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from someone a lot of us never heard of, and visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. Right now, let's get to today's first guest. Okay, long awaited. We've got John Verrico on the phone. He's with the Department of Homeland Security, and he is the Director of Information, I think is what he just told me. Welcome to the program, John.
Thank you, Colonel. It's good to be here. The actual title is Chief of Media Relations, but it's a mouthful. Basically, the easiest way to describe what I do is the spokesman for the Science and Technology Directorate.
Yeah, absolutely. And you and I are old friends. We've spoken many times before. So this is very exciting. We understand Dr. Reginald Brothers, who's the Undersecretary of Homeland Security for Science and Technology, is going to be a keynote at this year's IEEE Homeland Security Technologies Conference, which is going on April 14th through 16th. And a number of things are happening, and I understand the Department of Homeland Security, Science, and Technology is going to be pretty embedded with this year's program. A panel discussion, I guess, and a get-acquainted meeting with Dr. Brothers. And tell us some of the new developments that have been going on, the emphasis of what's happening at Homeland Security.
Well, you know, we're actually taking a completely different approach to really the way government operates and how we do government procurement. Mm-hmm. we're looking at, or I should say, how we're doing research and development. So let me, if I may, just back up for just a second and quickly give a brief description of what the Science and Technology Directorate is actually about.
Okay.
We are the research and development arm for the Department of Homeland Security, and a lot of people mistakenly believe that the R&D that we do is only for the department folks, like the folks in the front line, the Coast Guard, FEMA, TSA, the Border Patrol, ICE, all of those guys who are actually on the front line of operations. But actually, not only do we serve those folks, we also have a responsibility to provide technology for every first responder in the U.S.
Is that right? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, we are tasked with it's all part of what we call the Homeland Security Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
So every firefighter, policeman, emergency medical technician, bomb squad, all of those folks are kind of target customers for us. And as well as critical infrastructure owners and operators.
Okay.
So whether the local power company is operated by the local government or a private sector corporation, we still have a responsibility to work with them to protect infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the idea is to provide all sorts of sometimes technology solutions, sometimes it's just information, sometimes it's analytical processes for preventing or responding to and recovering from any sort of a disaster, whether it's man-made or natural. So that's quite an enormous mission space and quite a broad spectrum of mission.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's no doubt you've been giving some serious thought and come up with some new angles and new things, I understand, this fall, and you've been in and out of some important meetings. Tell us what are the outcome of some of that stuff.
Well, let me tell you about probably the most exciting thing. When Dr. Brothers came in earlier this year as our new undersecretary, he started us on a path to try to understand where we need to be directing our research and development efforts,
mm-hmm.
and not just in the near term, but looking out 20, 30 years from now, what should be our desired end states? What are we going to try to get to? Because whatever we're trying to get to at that end is what we should be working on now. So he reached out, and the first thing he did was he reached out internally through the directorate and said, look, you guys have been working with the operational folks for a while. You talk to them to understand what it is that they need,
mm-hmm.
and then you work with industry and academia and government labs to help to develop the technologies to meet those challenges. So what is it that we should be working on?
Mm-hmm.
And so a group internally started putting together some ideas, some visionary goals of what we should be probably looking at trying to do over the next 20, 30 years. They can vote on the remarks, they can add things, and so we wound up with a completely revised set of visionary goals from what was originally drafted. Then here's where it gets really into a realm that government normally doesn't do, but we reached out to all of our stakeholders. So all those people I mentioned earlier, and also when we say the Homeland Security Enterprise, it's also just basic citizens as well. So we reached out and said, okay, everybody in the country, look at our visionary goals. What are these the things that we should be trying to achieve? And we'd like your input. And we did this on an online collaboration platform, and we got thousands and thousands of responses back. And then we had to sort through it all, and the end result were the new visionary goals that we have. We started with 4 in the draft. Those were revised somewhat, and now we have 5. And so I'll give you a quick idea of what those are, and they can be found on our website, which is SCITECH,
okay.
scitech.dhs.gov. And these are the visionary goals, and the first one is screening at speed, security that matches the pace of life. So the basic premise there is there's all sorts of security screening that needs to happen. Most people think, the luggage line at TSA.
Mm-hmm.
That's not quite it. There's all sorts of screening that needs to be accomplished, whether any sort of a checkpoint area, cargo screening, all of that stuff. The idea is to be able to accomplish whatever security screening we need to do without impeding the flow of traffic, without inconveniencing the traveling public or whoever it is that is involved in being screened.
So the idea is we want to be safe and secure in the things that we're doing, but we don't want to be so inconvenienced that we're losing a good portion of our liberty, right?
That's exactly it. The idea is to be as unobtrusive as possible of people, baggage, cargo, whatever it is, and enable seamless detection of the threats while respecting people's privacy and having a minimal impact to the flow of commerce.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's quite a goal to try to achieve, but that's where we want to try to head to. So the things that we'll be looking at will be helping us to move toward that goal.
It sounds pretty impossible. I mean, how are you going to do all this? You're soliciting new technologies, I guess, from the marketplace. Is that right?
Well, it's not just soliciting technologies. A lot of people think we're just doing this a technology at a time. Mm-hmm. We're looking for ideas. We're looking for ways to expand concepts. We're looking at changing sometimes standards of practice or operational practices that might make the interface between humans and whatever technology is involved just go better, smoother, change the way things operate so that it becomes less and less invasive.
Mm-hmm.
So another realm or another goal is our trusted cyber future. Obviously, you know, cybersecurity is an enormous area and a high priority. So the idea, of course, is to have a cyber connections that and an underlying digital infrastructure that could be self-detecting, self-protecting, and self-healing.
How are you going to do that, John? I mean, that sounds like it's so impossible. I mean, we've talked about this so many times about how we're going to, you know, there's people even saying the internet ought to be scrapped and ought to be rebuilt, and others are saying we can't do that. We've already got too much investment in the things that we're doing. It's impossible. But how in the world are we going to stop this cyber warfare that seems to become more intrusive all the time?
You know, there are new and better technologies every day. We just had, actually this week ongoing now, and this is mid-December, we are having a cybersecurity research and development showcase going on with a couple of hundred researchers who've been working with us on a variety of technologies that help to secure the internet.
Okay.
Or help to secure software. And it's everything from technologies that enable you to secure your software packages and make sure that the software doesn't have vulnerabilities in it, to things that protect mobile applications, things that help DNS connecting and ensuring the veracity of the requests that are coming in and the pings that are coming in from IPs, addresses. So it's really, it's quite a broad field. And there were 11 new technologies that were developed in laboratories and by private sector that we were showcasing, that we helped to fund. And we were showcasing, they are now ready for transition, so we were looking for people in the commercial sector to come forth and start taking a look at these things and trying to turn them into commercial products. Besides those 11, there were another 60 that were being demonstrated or showcased in various stages of prototype.
Well, I can imagine private industry is quite interested in having that happen. Sony Pictures just recently getting hacked from what is believed to be the North Koreans in retaliation for a movie that they are releasing about the a mythical assassination of their leader. So, and then, of course, a year ago was Target. And just one thing after another. So I could imagine you're going to get a lot of help from private industry.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And that's a really critical area, by the way. We were talking when I mentioned taking these prototypes. There are some really brilliant scientists out there, both in the private sector and in government and in academia, who are coming up with some really brilliant ideas. And whether it's in the cyber realm or any of the other visionary goal areas that I'll mention here in a moment, the idea is that they can get stuff to a prototype level, but they don't know how, they don't have any idea of how to transition it and turn it into a commercial product.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of our, and traditionally in the research and development world, that's called the Valley of Death. from the time you've got a prototype that's ready to go in the lab and then actually getting it out into the hands of practitioners. And that's the hardest part for all of research and development, is actually making that final step, that transition to commercial.
Are you going to help these people get their stuff commercially viable? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. We have been running, again, in the cyber realm, we've been running what we call transition to practice conferences, where we bring forth technologies that were developed by the Department of Energy laboratories and meet with private sector and capital investors and venture capitalists and say, hey, guys, these things are ripe and ready to go. We just need somebody to take them and start embedding them into, start turning them into real products. And sometimes it's, you know, maybe it's a code that has to be embedded in software or whatever. But we need folks to actually take this on and start mass producing whatever it is the device is.
So you're trying to you're gonna really try to marry the intellectual end of things, the bright ideas, with the people that will fund it and finance it. In other words, you're going to be kind of a conduit between both the creators of these things and those who are willing to finance bringing it to market. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And the reason behind that, obviously, is you can have the greatest idea in the world, but if it doesn't ever get developed to a point where it can be used, it's useless.
Mm. Absolutely. Okay. All right. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, no problem. So, like I said, there are three other areas in the visionary goals. I talked about the cybersecurity, the trusted cybersecurity future, but also we have the responder of the future. So when you're looking at firefighters and police and emergency medical technicians and bomb squads, there's a lot of technology that they need, but then there's only so much space on their physical person that they can put things, and so many devices that they can have. So we want to be able to make sure that responders in the future have all of the capabilities that they need in order to do their job efficiently and effectively, and not be encumbered, and to make sure that everything that they have is interoperable, so that you know, it becomes seamless to be able to do things from one piece to the next. One of the first areas that we're going to be looking at is wearable technology.
Wearable technology. What do you mean? Cameras?
Anything that would be actually be physically on the person. And I don't mean clipped to the belt, you know, for a quick grab, but actually something that you would wear. There are clothing that would have embedded sensors in it to monitor a firefighter's vital signs, so that when they are running into a fire scenario and they're now out of the line of sight of command and control, they can still keep track of that person's heart rate, respiration. They can understand their core body temperature and understand if that person is starting to get in trouble and needs to be pulled out.
Yeah, the other thing that you mentioned is interactive equipment, and I'm not certainly not going to be getting you into any sort of policy ideas or any statements or any commitments, or political statements or anything like that. We were interested in what's going on with the agency, but that reminded me of the fact that the airline pilots who are allowed to carry pistols in the cockpit, that ammunition doesn't match the ammunition that the sky marshals carry on the planes. They're not interchangeable ammunition, and I would think that is one area that Homeland Security could look at and say, hey, you know, if you're going to give firearms to the pilots and the sky marshals, they ought to at least be able to have interchangeable ammunition.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention things along those lines. One of the biggest challenges that the first responder community has, especially, is that, you know, all of these different companies are out there producing various types of tools, whether it's defense weapons communication devices, you know, the newest radios, and they basically tell folks, hey, this is the product that you need, and you know, there's no way for them to really verify what that product can do and whether or not it will really ultimately solve their ultimate need. And so what we are doing is trying to help to vet that stuff, and by working directly with the first responders in the first place, in order to understand truly what their capability gap is. And then we can go out to industry and say, look, you guys got something close, but let's modify it so it's actually truly usable and will really solve the need. A good example of that are things like the multiband radio. You know, when multiple jurisdictions are responding to a disaster or some kind of a large-scale event, they can't necessarily speak to each other on their land mobile radios because of different frequencies that they're on, because they may have come from an area with a different topography, so they've got different kinds of signals. There are some folks with analog, some folks with digital. And so they have to be able to communicate with each other, but they can't. So there was one officer who told me he worked security at the Super Bowl and wore 8 radios in his uniform in order to be able to talk to the different branches.
Wow.
And it's kind of insane. So the idea is that we're trying to find solutions that make these things interoperable with each other. And so it reduces the need to replace entire costly infrastructures. So you can't just replace the whole land mobile radio system for a police department. They don't have that kind of money.
Yeah.
So how do we take those old legacy systems and make them usable in the modern day and make them be able to interact and interoperate with the newer technologies or with other technologies even of the same era?
All right, now let me ask you something. Working with these first responders around the country, that's a pretty big operation. Are you doing you're doing this online, I suppose, and by phone and other means, but are you sending teams out to actually visit with the firemen and the policemen and the different people that are going to need to have these techniques of this equipment?
All of the above. All of the above. We actually have advisory groups that consist of active firefighters, search and rescue guys, police, and those kind of folks. They're involved with us on a regular basis to take a look at ideas or to talk about capability gaps. We go to events where we can meet with folks. We actually embed sometimes and go out with people. We actually have had people who've gone out on wildfire calls with the crews out in the woods fighting wildland fires in order to be able to understand exactly what they're going through out there so that we can come up with solutions of various types that are going to be practical and usable.
All right.
The biggest problems in wildland fires is being able to stay connected electronically to, you know, communications-wise with your command and control and with each other, because there's fewer and fewer signals out there. A lot of places don't even have GPS out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
All right, so what else have we got here? We got the getting through TSA and other places pretty easily. We've got the cybersecurity, and now we have first responders and things. We're working with them, but you mentioned there were 5. So how are we doing here?
The other two, and I'll be briefer on those. One is enabling the decision maker. Now, understand, there has been a huge push for many years to be able to provide more and more data to people so that they can make smarter and smarter decisions.
Okay.
Such as response and recovery types of decisions after a natural disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of imaging programs. We have so much data now. A certain environment where there's chemical or biological or radiological elements involved, you need to be able to make decisions rather quickly in order to minimize the impact. And in order to do that, you have to know what it is that you're dealing with. And how let's say it's a chemical, you need to know what the properties of that chemical are going to respond to. So those are the kinds of things that you will need, and you need quickly.
How do you accomplish that? I mean, what do you do? I mean, you've got an expert that can instantly pull up stuff and give an answer? Is that how you do it?
Well, no. The idea is there's all sorts of data analytics that we're looking at in digital visualization of material. And basically trying to figure out, and this is probably going to be one of the toughest ones, it's basically figuring out what information you're going to need and you're going to need access to quickly, and how to break it down for you so that you can make the right decision.
Well, I would guess that you must be working closely with FEMA on some of these things, too. Is that right?
Oh, we are working with all of the operational units on these things. FEMA's
well, John, we're sure that FEMA isn't the only one, and we want to talk more about that in the second half hour. Right now, we do have to take a quick break, and then we'll be back in the second half hour with John Verrico, Chief of Media Relations, Department of Homeland Security, Science, and Technology, and he's going to explain to us a little bit more about what's going on to the new direction that the Department of Homeland Security is taking in our protection, and an encore presentation by Francina Hulris on national security. So stick around. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers. where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who, in the den of strangers, will we meet today?
William Somerset, Mom. Perfection. It's a trifle dull. It is not the least of life's ironies that this, which we all aim at, is better not quite achieved.